Hey, this is James from SurvivalPunk.com. Good morning, guys. This is another wonderful episode. No Couch Potato Mike and his wonderful voices this week. It's just going to be me. So, do enjoy. And we're going to be picking up with the next part in our first aid series. I didn't get overly bold this time. Like the first time when I plotted out the episode, I'm like, oh, we're just going to do a whole episode on first aid kits and it will all be in one episode and it'll be super easy. And then we'll move on from first aid to like the shit has hit the fan. It's more in depth, more, you know, you are the only doctor, you know, whereas first aid kits are designed to treat boo-boos, headaches, minor scrapes and cuts. Okay, so the things that you encounter daily, as opposed to, you know, the monster stomp kits that will replace a doctor, basically. That more than likely you do not have the training to use anyway. So instead of spending a couple hundred dollars on an expensive first aid kit, maybe spend a couple hundred dollars on medical training first. There are a lot of good classes at Patriot Nurse. She does classes. I know the Dr. Bones, Nurse Amy, they do some classes as well. There are a lot of good classes. If you find someone that you really like and they are not teaching a class near you, contact them. Me and the, when we had it, the Zombie Squad Nashville, chapter forum, I organized the very first Patriot Nurse class, which was a deal. Like she did it for, God, $25 or something a person, $25.50, something like that. There was a huge turnout. It wasn't as in depth as her classes are now, just being her first class. But man, was it a value for whatever it was we paid for. And then, I organized another class that was more traumatic wounds, gunshot wounds, that thing. And that was a good thing. That was a good class. It's not very hard to organize these classes, and the organizer can get yourself a free spot to them. So, just a side note, something that I've done, I usually would decline the free spot to make the, and then buffer that price out. So like, it was like, I would get a free spot and everyone would have to pay $120 on that last class. And I decided to make the offer that instead of paying $120 for everyone, I would pay for mine and the price itself would go down to $100. And that worked out really well. And, you know, I'm not afraid to pay for quality training, and neither should you be. So yeah, this is a daily use thing. So whereas like in the prepper survival community, everyone's like, you know, gunshot wounds are glamour and glitzy, so that's what everyone focuses on. But more than likely, you have like headaches and allergies more often. That's part of the reason we went so long on the medicine part. That tends to be the stuff that you're going to actually use more often. So for a daily use first aid kit, something you keep in your car, that's what you're going to use. So that's why I build these kits around sort of the daily, you know, for lack of a better term, boo-boos. You know, the minor things, they don't really matter that much, but they're a nuisance and it sure does help. I mean, that's what we prep for. We prep to make life better. So that stuff. And then the other part of it is blood control, wound closure, that's mostly blood control. To stop yourself from bleeding out and dying to make it to the hospital. So, you know, it's not you don't need a doctor. You can do everything with this kit. This kit will more or less keep you together until you can get better treatment. and get you through your day-to-day life, which happens more often than gunshot wounds, believe it or not. So I've tried to not be too overzealous for this next episode. And if it somehow manages to come under time, then we'll just let it run and the next episode will pick up. But I kind of doubt it. And we're going to be talking about wounds. We're going to be talking about wounds. So this is where the blood control wound closure part of the first aid kit comes in. Originally, I'd thought about putting in sprains, strains, breaks in this, but that's I need to break that out. I know. Oh, yeah, so Mike's not here to remind me stuff on the board. Let me look real quick. These solo shows always get me. I just want to keep talking, but... So there is a phone number. You can call in with questions or comments for the show, Mike or me, James or Mike, and leave us a message. So you can call area code 615-657-9104. 615-657-9104. You can also, if you are a fellow podcaster or have a good mic or just feel like it, you can record your phone call and email it to me, jamesfarrellpunk.com. I check the spam filter and I check in the email boxes, so I'll get in there and check those. I know Matt called in recently, Matt from Oklahoma, on kilt purchase, because for my wedding, I'm encouraging myself and everyone to wear a kilt. So I've seen the question, Matt, and I will be getting to you on that. So next up is most of you are not going to the website and downloading this. And if you are, then I appreciate that. But a lot of you are going to various different websites, players, you have podcatchers, iTunes is the big one, Stitcher is out there. So whatever you listen to us on, iTunes is the number one out there. So if you would go to iTunes, rate us and review us, then send me an email, james@survivalpunk.com, with your username that you use on iTunes so I can go verify it. And in that email, include your address. I will send you a Survival Punk sticker in thanks. And like I've said every time, really, I'm not buying 5-star reviews. Honestly, let me know what you think, because, you know, that's the feedback of the audience helps me direct the show. Like, I have my own... Everyone has their own agenda, and, you know, I make the podcast that I would want to listen to, but, you know, if the majority of my audience is like, we want less of this and more of this, or we want this back, then, you know, I will give it to you. So, yeah, leave me a review on iTunes and email me, and you can get a free sticker. And... yeah, there's no limitations. If you are in Canada, New Zealand, anywhere in the world, I'll foot the shipping. That would be cool to see stickers going all across the world. So yeah, some people limit these things, like, oh, it's only continental U.S. But, you know, the sticker is so small that postage anywhere in the world shouldn't be an issue. So anywhere, doesn't matter where you're at. I believe that is it. This is a lot of house cleaning. Sorry, guys. I was thinking about running a sale on the Survival Punk Army, which is my membership program, and doing that. But to be honest, right now, and I will run a sale in the future. So if you're interested in joining it, wait probably just a little bit. with all the hurricanes and the disasters going on right now, I would probably, not probably, I encourage you, if you're thinking about joining the Survival Punk Army and you only have a few bucks to either join or give some money to a relief effort, give the money to the relief effort. I'll still be here to gladly accept your money soon, but right now there are a lot of people that need it more. Not a big fan of the Red Cross, but, you know, I gave my relief money to the Jack Spearco's Citizen Assisting Citizens, the CAC team, because I know that they're going to use the money and do good. If you find a person doing a relief effort, like from our own punks, Scav LR Kalo, he went down to Florida and did some relief work, and he actually had money left over. So instead of, you know, buying liquor and dead hookers, you know, he took a poll to decide what to do with that, you know, to put it in a different charity or whatever, and then did what the people said. And then I'm pretty sure I saw him, like, post, like, oh, here's the transaction. Like, boom, it's gone. Like, so, you know, I like that. I've kind of got away from big charities and moved more towards personal charities and GoFundMes and stuff. So that way, you know, it's, there's not a lot, like the Red Cross has so much overhead that, you know, they have a full-time board of members. They get money, you know, it's like, it's become too big and convoluted. I'd rather have small and distributed things. So with that, let's get into the show because I've went long on rambling. My bad. This is not the podcast for that. Never mind. never mind. So, yeah. First Aid Kits Part 2. And this is, well, I don't know, wound management or something. A good part of it is stopping bleeding and then closing the wound and cleaning the wound. So we'll just say wound management, maybe. I don't know. Cleaning the wound. This is, I've seen the evolution of wound cleaning, you know, on the internet, in the internet forums over the past, I don't know, decade or so. And it's gone around a lot, and it ended up being pretty simple now. Like, you know, when I first got into survival and first aid, survivalism, first aid was one of the things that I really geeked out on. Like, that just really drew me in. And it was pretty convoluted there for a while. Like, I saw some guys with some just crazy setups, and not really, you know. Since then, like, you really don't see a lot of hydrogen peroxide in first aid kits anymore. Because it causes some pretty bad, you know, tissue damage. So if you pour that in an open wound, you can have some bad tissue damage. Sorry, I was reaching for my coffee and spilled it on myself and knocked down the board. Whatever. Coffee abuse. So yeah, you don't see that in there much anymore. Alcohol wipes aren't really recommended for wounds anymore. You know, minor topical scrapes and stuff, probably okay, but probably not really necessary. More or less for cleaning tools and your hands, as opposed to open wounds. So, how do you clean a wound? Water or saline is probably the best. In a lot of first aid kits now, I tend to see and tend to do myself are like just a couple bottles of water. I mean, it has so many uses. You know, just a plain bottle of water, good, sterile, clean, not open, you know. So you just buy a case of water and throw a couple in your first aid kit. One, you have water in there. And, you know, worst case scenario, you're dying of dehydration. You break into the first aid kit. That's first aid. Not dehydrating and dying. That's first aid. So that's a use. Irrigating the wound with fresh water that's a good practice. Just plain water. It not going to cause tissue damage. Can clean out a lot of stuff. Like, you know, like originally you'd see people suggesting having all sorts of tweezers and forceps and stuff to pick debris out of the wound, which one, you have to sterilize the equipment or you're introducing more bacteria and germs into the wound. Two, if you're doing it yourself, your hands might be shaky. You might like nick stuff in there. Like you might cause more damage going in there, just pulling the stuff out. So now the more preferred method is to just irrigate with water or saline. And I'll talk about saline in just a second, but just water. And something that I've seen mentioned a lot and that I like more than just opening the cap on the bottle and pouring it in there, because you don't get very good, like you can do that and it will wash it out, but I'm a bigger fan of like puncturing a small hole in your cap bottle and then sort of squeezing it in there. You get more, you can get a little bit more pressure. You don't want to go crazy with the pressure though. You're not trying to like pressure wash your wound because that could cause more damage. But I like that it, you can direct it a bit easier. You can even like slow drip it a bit more. So you make that call. You can either take the lid off or you just puncture a small hole in it and use it like a squeeze bottle. Or just getting a bottle of saline solution, even, and maybe you medical professionals will disagree with me, but a lot of the eye contact solution is just saline. So it's easy to find, comes in a nice squirt bottle. I don't mind using like just eyeglass solution, and if it's good enough to go in your eyes, if it doesn't have added stuff for like, you know, this or that or ever, it's just like plain, like the simplest eyeglass or contact solution. It's meant to go in your eyes. So I'm okay with it going in a wound. A wound might as well be your eyes. So it's, you know, I read something that was like, don't put anything in an open wound that you wouldn't put in your eyes. Well, I flipped that around the other way. Don't put anything in your wound that you wouldn't put in your, or don't put anything in, yeah, your wound that you won't put in your eyes. So don't put anything in your eyes you won't put in your wound. I hate that coffee cup. You guys can't see. I had to use a different coffee cup today, and I've just spilt it everywhere. Twice, actually. I've spilt it everywhere twice. Whatever. So yeah, and then the contact solution. So, you can get either or. The contact solution, the saline, will help sterilize the wound without causing tissue damage. You know, like the hydrogen peroxide and stuff will. So, you know, maybe you have two bottles of plain water in there, and you have like one of the big size saline solutions in there, or you know, whatever you feel comfortable with. Maybe just one or the other, or more saline and no water. But I would suggest having at least a water over the saline, me personally. Next up is a mild soap. I saw soft soap being said that is decent. An antibacterial soap. I'm not too... Yeah. So, and I had a hard time really finding, like, what really, like, hospitals and medical practitioners would suggest and that you can find for home use easily. Soft soap seems to be just an easy one, and a lot of them come in like little squeeze containers, so it's easy to carry in a first aid kit, unlike some of the big, you know, the hand pump ones. There, you'd want to replace that hand pump with a squeezy nozzle. So, or even like make some like little, like if you soak a paper towel or a gauze pad in soft soap and then seal that in a Ziploc bag or something, then you can like have a single use thing without carrying the bulk and the weight. I like that idea myself. But I'd rather just have like a little squeeze bottle of it and then keep that in a Ziploc bag as well. Everything in Ziploc bags. So yeah, mild soap. You don't want to get it crazy washing out the inside of the wound. This is, a lot of this stuff I use for the outside of the wound. So, people would suggest, you know, cleaning the inside of the wound with the stuff that you would use on the outside. And I don't, or at least I don't think any of them do anymore. You know, medical procedures and everything changes so often that it's hard to keep up. Your doctor should be reading constantly. So yeah, the mild soap, the iodine, all that. I don't even have any of that stuff listed because I'm not a huge fan of it. But, you know, it's cheap, so you might want to throw some in there. That's for outside. Like, you clean the outside. Like, even if you have, if you've had surgery or stitches, you've seen them take the iodine and they swab around it, but they won't go into the wound. Same thing with you. The soft soap is for the area around it, because you don't want stuff getting into your wound from around it. And, you know, hospitals and the medical industry as a whole benefited a lot when, I believe it was Nurse Nightingale, came up with, sort of the sanitation stuff, you should probably clean your hands. Like, that's a good idea. So, soft soap to clean your hands, and then probably keep some hand sanitizer in there to finish the job off, or one or the other. Hand sanitizer by itself will be fine, but sometimes hand sanitizer will leave stuff on there. Your hands may be sterile, but there's still stuff on there. So, wet wipes. Once again, you don't want to go in the wound with wet wipes. This is for your hands, surrounding area. I don't know if I would be super, if it's a shallow wound and you just went over, if you scraped a knee or something, I wouldn't think twice about using a wet wipe over the entire area. You know, I really wouldn't. Something that mild, a mild cut, if you just run the wet wipe over the area, you know, without pushing directly in the wound, then you'll probably be fine. Antiseptics. So I like to keep a variety, and I wasn't really sure where to put the antiseptics and stuff. Cause I'm technically it's kind of a medicine, but we didn't really talk about Neosporin or anything in the medicine episode. And it probably should have been, which means that episode would have been 2 hours or something. But yeah, a variety of antiseptic creams, Neosporin, A&D, I like the generic triple antibiotic ointment, the Neosporin spray. I don't know if I have a old container of it. I don't even know if you can find it anymore, and you can probably find something similar, but, it was just a little container and it sprayed an antiseptic spray. So those things are good to keep on hand. They help with healing and they help to ensure that you don't get an infection, and every little bit helps. You know, large gaping wound, probably don't want to fill with Neosporin. Small cut with your kitchen knife, which may or may not have a ton of bacteria on it, probably not a bad idea. So just have some of it and keep it in there. Another thing you want to keep in there that listener Carissa, who works in the medical industry, wrote in about last episode, and I'm like, shit, I did forget that, was a topical lidocaine. She said lidocaine jelly because unfortunately, and I've looked for it when I was trying to build my survival kit, getting injectable lidocaine is kind of hard. Not impossible, mind you. Not impossible. There are some dark places on the interwebs where you can find everything. But probably not worth it. not worth it. Unless you are building that without rule of law collapse med kit, then you might want to think about some injective lidocaine, which I'm not sure if it needs to be refrigerated or not. Carissa, correct me. I don't know one way or the other. And I don't know what the shelf life is either. A lot of like regular medicines, I don't even care about the shelf life. Serenity, who thinks that things expire and go bad immediately. Like medications, I've seen, and there's no way I can find it to link the report. It's disappeared off the internet. If you know where it's at, link to me. But there was a military research done, a military investigation done on the efficacy of medications past their expiration date. And it was like, I think at 10 years past the expiration date, they were half as effective. So 10 years after the expiration date, take two of them. I mean, very few drugs actually become dangerous after the expiration date. Most of them just become less effective. Things like, and we talked about this before, insulin, injectable insulin, that is a different matter. Some antibiotics are a different matter. Tetracycline, maybe, I think actually becomes dangerous. So most everything else, don't worry about it. There's a few things that, yeah, really only the tetracycline that I know gets dangerous, like toxic. And insulin, it does not have a long shelf life. It needs to be refrigerated, and it will go bad. And will not go bad. Its efficacy drops so much faster than everything else. Like, yeah, that's a whole different matter. But, you know, Advil that's 10 years old, take twice what you would take. So yeah, topical lidocaine. You know, it can't hurt. It, you know, it's not going to completely numb the pain, but it could take some pain away. So that's good. And throw it in your kit. I think I have some in there, and you know, it can't hurt. It could actually make things not hurt, literally. Next up is blood control. By blood control, I mean stopping the blood from flowing out of you and dying. So there are several ways to keep this from happening, to keep yourself from bleeding out and dying. Number one, if you've ever seen an 80s action movie, you know, apply pressure to the wound. That's how you stop the bleeding. So yeah, it's kind of the first go-to. If it's an emergency, just stick your hands right on it. Like I said, this is not the without doctor survival kit here. If you have gunk on your hands and you stop the bleeding with your hands with gunk on them and then go straight to the hospital and tell them, they're going to prescribe antibiotics and they'll be fine anyway. So, you know, it's like a survival situation where you know you're only going to be gone for a couple of days, so you drink contaminated water, then just go to the hospital. They'll give you antibiotics, and they'll kill the Giardia and whatnot in your stomach, which takes a couple of days to manifest anyway. So, long-term survival? Don't drink the contaminated water. Short-term? Yeah, go ahead. Same thing with this wound thing. Better would be to put on gloves and use a pad between you and them, because the pad's going to suck it up and help you apply the pressure. So that comes to number two on this list is gauze. Good old cheap gauze. And it comes in a variety of form. You get gauze pads, you know, dressings, or roll gauze. like Kerlix. Kerlix tends to be, it's awesome. and even the generic stuff, it, you know, if you find a deal on eBay on Kerlix, then snatch it up. Sometimes if you buy it like in the store, a roll at a time, it's like $3 a roll. So it gets a little pricey to really stock up on them. There's my alarm. So yeah, I have, you know, it's one, keep an eye out for them, you know, look for deals, look for discounts, and buy then. Don't just go to the store and be like, oh, $3 a roll. And hold on, this was $3 a roll. I don't know if the price has gone up because I haven't bought it in a while because I bought so much of it. So yeah, definitely look around for that. Israeli bandages, they tend to be pretty expensive, but probably worth it to get, you know, I'm not going to say go buy like 50 of them because that would be a massive amount of money unless you found a great discount. But to have, you know, one or two in your kit or so, you know, I was like one or two per kit, it might add up, you know, you don't have to go buy all these at once. Buy one, throw it in your kit. Unless you find a deal that's like, if you find a deal to get a bunch for a better price than like staggering out, then maybe you want to do that. You know, if you allocate, say, a certain amount of money per paycheck to buy preps, then maybe you just throw that whole amount, depending on how much you allocate. You know, like I tend to say that no matter how broke you are, generally, you can just take a $20 bill and throw towards preps every paycheck. It's not a lot. Maybe you just eat out less or something, but you can generally afford it. And $20 worth of Israeli bandages, you might get two or so, depending on how the deal you find is. Usually, eBay is usually pretty decent. Amazon, I think for those, tends to be a bit more expensive. Maybe you can find a website that has a better price. But for a lot of the stuff, eBay is a good place. Amazon, I've not price checked them on Amazon to know what they are. So let's actually look right now if I can spell right. All right. Amazon, Israeli bandage. No, go back. There's a website, IsraeliFirstAid.com. I'm not endorsing them, I don't know. Let's see. It looks like... No. 637 looks to be the lowest price. So yeah, that's on Amazon, $637. There is, and they have, okay, so I'm saying Israeli bandages, they have some different stuff like the battle bandage, and Israeli is sort of tried and true. It's a blood stopping bandage that you can kind of like ratchet down to apply pressure. They're useful, and that's why I said, like, it's, you know, for $637, if you're spending $20 for your preps, you know, you can get about three of them. Depending on, well, Amazon doesn't always charge taxes, so get three of them. And that's, you can put two in one kit and one another, or put three in three kits, or however you want to split them up. Grab some. speaking of pressure and bandage and stuff, If it's a major bleeding event, throw a tourniquet on it. I mean, you will tend to find some, like, you'll always find on the internet a fucking mongoloid that's like, they put tourniquets on soldiers in the Civil War and they had to amputate all their limbs because they just went and died from lack of blood flow and blah, blah, blah. And there's always that fucking idiot. So ignore them. If you put a tourniquet on someone and leave it on them for like 2 days, then yes, lack of blood flow to that limb will probably cause it to die, and it will have to be amputated. If you're putting a tourniquet on someone and there is a first responder, an ambulance on the way, or you are immediately going straight to the doctor, and the doctor's going to be like, okay, tourniquet, good. You stop the blood flow. They'll take it off. Limb is saved. You know, like I said, this is immediately, it's going to stop the blood, and that's the issue. You know, it starts a sort of timer. You know, you know you have so long before you have to remove that tourniquet, but say you have a wound on the femoral artery inside of your thigh, you will die, I don't know, seconds, minutes? You'll die fast from a femoral artery wound, as opposed to maybe if you leave the tourniquet on for days, you'll lose the limb. Limb, life, not really a hard choice here. I'd slap the tourniquet on and just try get straight to medical attention. Let them deal with it. You know, in the backwoods, in your house, you know, you're not going to perform femoral artery surgery. You're not going to reattach that. You don't have the skills for that. I don't care if you saw a YouTube video on it. You can't do it. So, tourniquet, get to the hospital. You know, and fuck, that's damn near anything. Like, you know, you have a bad wound. Slap a tourniquet on it. If you're going straight to the hospital, I wouldn't even think twice about it. And neither should you. You know, next up is clotting agents. And some people in the survival industry, like, they just get boners for clotting agents, like Celox and Quick Clot. It needs, you know, it would behoove you to have some. And once again, I love using that word. It would behoove you to have some in your first aid kit. I wouldn't go crazy with it. It's expensive. You know, it's kind of a pain in the ass for the medical people. So when you get there, you're going to have to tell them, hey, I put Celox Quick Clot. I put a clotting agent in this wound. They're going to have to thoroughly clean it out, remove it all. Because, one, you don't want someone, you yourself or them, stitching you up with Celox inside you. Not a good thing. it could save your life, but, you know, it's a pain in the ass, too. So if it goes in, it has to come out. Like I said, I wouldn't make this a big part of your first aid kit. I would get, I don't know, one. I have one thing of sports Celox in my first aid kit, and that's all I've really allocated to it. If the dressings and the gauze do not stop the bleeding, and it's not a place where the tourniquet's really going to work well, then that would be a good time to use the clotting agents. I was going to say, God forbid, if you're in a firefight, which is going way off into the prepper, like, you know, fantasy world here. But if that's going on and you don't have time to really apply pressure to your buddy or yourself that got shot, then yeah, just dump some Celox in there and do what you got to do. I tend to think it's either for places where a tourniquet don't work and the gauze is not working effectively, or for time. You just dump it in there and you know it's going to stop the bleeding. So, yeah, whatever, you know, whatever is that. I would be hesitant to use sea locks in something really deep or like a stomach wound. I wouldn't, medical professionals, please comment, but something like that where it could just get everywhere inside and go in places you don't want it to. And like I said, if it goes in, it has to come out. Cleaning it out of that definitely wouldn't put it in a chest wound. Not at all. So these clotting agents, and you'll see people on the internet say use stuff like cayenne, which could work, but for everything that I would use cayenne for, I really just think that bandages and dressings and gauze I'd rather just use that. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Things like your fingers and your hands and places where that, I'd rather just use that. I guess knowing that cayenne will clot a wound, maybe that's a good thing to throw in the back of your head, but that would be a last resort after you've run everything else. I'm not going to put cayenne in my first aid kit, guys. I will have a little bit of a clotting agent, though, if whatever you want. Celox tends to be pretty available to find. Usually you can find some of these clotting agents in the camping area of your, big box store. I don't know if I've seen any in the pharmacy first aid areas of the big box stores, though. So something to keep in mind. Wound closure. So we've cleaned our wound. We've stopped it from bleeding. Now we need to close it. Maybe. So in a lot of these cases, you might just need to clean it, stop it from bleeding, and just prevent anything from getting in there and go to the hospital. You don't necessarily have to close all wounds. In a lot of cases, closing the wound might not be beneficial. So what I mean by that is if you may have missed some debris inside that was embedded. There may be other things going on in there, that you need to take care of. I think I told last time, I had to have stitches on my knuckle, and the trained medical professional who is, very adept at her job, stitched up my knuckle and missed or didn't check the tendon, which was also needed to be stitched back together. Or it may not have been fully severed, but it needed, I think there was two stitches in the tendon. This was a long time ago. A long time ago, over a decade, way over a decade. You don't want us, you not being a medical professional would definitely miss that. And how are you going to do that? You don't want to seal yourself up if there's other things in there that need to be taken care of. So, you may not have cleaned it as well as could be. There's a lot of reasons why you would not want to close the wound. And we'll talk about some things to do for that. But how do you close the wound? We're going to start by the least severe to the most severe. Band-aids, adhesive strips. Your first aid kit should have a lot. You can get a box of band-aids, throw them in a Ziploc bag. Not in the box. You throw the box away, put them in a Ziploc bag. And I like a few different kinds of them. I think the official Band-Aid brand, there's a cloth one that's really good for fingers. I like that. Four fingers. There's waterproof ones. There's all kinds. You just get the cheapy ones, whatever you want to get. They're so cheap. I'll get a variety and throw a couple in there. And that's like you have a small cut. You just mildly clean it, put some Neosporin in it, throw a Band-Aid on it, and keep going about your business. You know, you have it cleaned and preventing more things from getting in there. And, you know, you keep changing the Band-Aid, and it's not a big deal. It'll work for some bigger cuts, but, you know, that's first line of defense. Throw a Band-Aid on it. Next up is something that can go a bit bigger, and it's good for a lot of things. It's good for keeping things from getting in your wound so you can make it to the hospital for them to deal with, and that's Tegaderm. I have some, and you know, because I remember when the internet was first kind of going crazy about them, and I bought some, and you know, when I have a chance, I try out my first aid stuff to see how it actually performed in real life. And I tried a Tegaderm once or twice, and more or less it worked okay, which is basically a clear plastic bandage that covers sometimes a large area, sometimes a small area. It lets you see it, but it seals it in, and it's waterproof. So on some things, it works a lot better than would a Band-Aid, and you know, it. I had some finicky issues with getting it to stay. I know there's something else people can use to like adhere it. You clean the skin and then you put on one thing and then you stick it on there. Most of the Tegaderms that you can find readily available commercially, you know, have a small adhesive strip and then you seal that over and then you seal the other side over. And the actual plastic part, the transparent plastic part that covers your wound is not sticky at all. So, and I do not think will stick to a wound either. So that's good. And they're cheap enough that you can throw a few in your first aid kit. You know, I wouldn't make them a huge priority if you're like, oh, you know, I can get Carelix or I can get another thing at Tegaderm, get some Carelix. Super glue is actually, I found out, is approved by the FDA for medical uses. So you can get the official like Dermabond or medical grade super glue, or you can just get the cheap super glue. And I usually just get the cheap super glue and throw some in my first aid kit, always in a good Ziploc bag to keep it from leaking and everything. Everything goes in a Ziploc bag. Everything. So yeah, super glue. You know, a minor cut or something that you know, like you get a cut on your finger and you just don't have, like, okay, we all know that Band-Aids kind of suck for finger wounds because it's hard to get them to stay on there. There was that video going around Facebook for a while. It was like, this is how you cut and slice a Band-Aid to make it wrap around your finger and work right. Like, if you're out hiking and you cut yourself and you know you need to put a Band-Aid on it, you know you need to close it so it doesn't keep getting junky, like, are you really going to take the time to, like, get out your little, like, multi-tool scissors and snip the thing and wrap it around? And you know you're going to have to replace it soon and you're going to have to just super glue it back together and go on. You know, clean it off, super glue it. Super glue will stop the blood from flowing out if it's still on a small wound. I wouldn't just squirt super glue into a big open wound. That just doesn't seem a good idea. But yeah, for small cuts, yeah, super glue. Won't even think twice about it. Gauze pads and medical tape. So, you know, if you have a wound that's sort of oozing and blood, and you know, you may stop the bleeding, but you have dressing on it. You know, it's gonna occasionally, some more will come out, maybe you'll get some pus. You need to keep that stuff from getting everywhere, and you need to keep stuff from getting into your wound. You just throw some dressings on there. You can grab them cheap from, you know, any pharmacy, and medical tape it on there, and you're good. So it's not really so much closing the wound as closing off the wound from the outside. And, you know, you'll keep changing it. So I tend, for some of the bigger wounds, If you use things like stereo strips, we'll talk about in a second, you cover these with a bigger dressing to, you know, catch anything that oozes out and just, you know, belt and suspenders here. You don't want anything to get into that wound to reinfect it or to contaminate it. So, you know, I have lots of gauze and dressings and pads in my first aid kit to stop the bleeding and then to keep it nice and sterile. Steri-strips. Steri-strips are easy to find, easy to use, require no training, and they're cheap. So Steri-strips are my go-to wound closure. Especially if you do, like I said, plan on going to the hospital. This kit is designed to get you through the day-to-day injuries and for the big injuries to just sort of patch you up enough to make it to the hospital for them to deal with that shit. If you have a wound that definitely needs stitches and you Steri-strip it closed, you're going to keep it better off. You're going to keep it, you know, secure. You're going to keep it from being contaminated, and they're easy to remove. You know, when you get to the hospital, the medical people can just easily pull off Steri-strips, investigate the wound, clean it out, irrigate it, stitch up your broken tendons if they need to, you know, and then they do their job. You know, whereas if you're out in the backcountry and you're like, well, I got my suture kit, I'm going to suture myself up, you know, and then you go to the hospital and they're going to have to remove your sutures that you put in yourself, which may or may not be contaminated, may be introducing more problems. Look inside the wound, clean it out. Like, you're just, it's so much, like the same thing with Celox. Like, you have an open wound, you just pour Celox in there. You get to the hospital, they're going to have to remove that. Steri-strips are really the easiest solution. Closes your wound, and it's removable. You know, if you could use them to just close a wound and not suture, like if, you know, not a major, sort of a mid-ground thing where, like, you could probably go to the hospital, but, you know, it's going to cost you a lot of money, and the Steri-strips will keep it closed, and it's not that bad. You know, I'm not a medical professional. I'm not giving you advice. This is the things that I've done myself, and blah, blah, blah. That's your disclaimer. It's all for informational purposes. That's it. Yeah. So, yeah. Steri-strips. Get them. Throw them in all your kits. Put them everywhere. That's my officially licensed survival punk, this is how you close a wound statement. Not in the collapse. When we get to, like, the next level stuff, you do need to move up a notch here, but Steri-strips work fine. Skin stapler. I have looked at skin staplers on Amazon and eBay before, and it's a fancy smancy thing to throw in your kit, but I that's definitely one of the more next level things. I just brought it up to mention that you should maybe have it on your mind. They're not that terribly expensive, actually. Under 50, maybe around 20 if you find them on sale. So maybe, I haven't looked at them in a while, but I would put that in the next level first aid kit. You know, this daily carry sort of level 2, level 1 first aid kits, you're not going to carry a skin stapler in there. You're going to carry your Steri-strips and your super glue. Borderline, you could carry this in like a level 2 first aid kit is a suture kit, you know, needle and thread suture kit. Yeah, you know, I almost don't even want to bring it up because I really don't want people in their level 1 and level 2 first aid kits even considering sutures. It's, you know, it's sort of the last line of defense, and I really think that you know, if you just want to, I guess you can. You know, you can watch plenty of YouTubes about plenty of YouTube videos on people that are self-suturing, and, you know, it probably works out fine for most of them, but, you know, I would definitely say that I would prefer you to get training. Nurse Amy, Dr. Bones, when they go to conventions and prepper conventions and stuff, they do like classes you can take for not a terrible amount of money, where you hands-on suture pig flesh together, you know, and then you know how to do it. I would suggest you do that before you even consider prepping a suture kit. I really do. I don't, for most of you, I don't think you even need to go to that level. If you have some suture kit in there and you just want to put it in there, that's fine. But I think money could be better spent on other things. So I don't suggest it. Not at all. Don't know that it's available, but don't get it. Buy more Steri-Strips, my friends. Buy more Steri-Strips. And with that, I'm glad I did not plan out the strain sprains and all that. So this is going to be like a 4-episode long series, I think. So once again, that's it. So email me any questions, concerns you have, jamessurvivalpunk.com. Stop by the website, survivalpunk.com, and make sure you comment on this episode. Let me know. Like I said, from last episode, I found out, you know, the lidocaine. Also, Carissa said that if you have kids, you would probably want to include some children's medicines in your medicine part of your first aid kit. That makes good sense, which obviously I didn't think about it. I don't have kids. So, Mike should have thought about it, but I didn't. So, yeah. I also, another bit of feedback, Grizz, my admin from the Survival Punk fan page and good friend, he mentioned that, so I talked about carrying the stack, ephedrine, caffeine, and aspirin, an ECA stack, you know, as a backup, like, bit of energy boost. So you're feeling sluggish, you're bugging out, you're escaping, evading, you need some extra energy, you take your ECA stack, 3 pills usually, or you can put them all in one capsule if you have a capsule thingy, you know, and it'll get you going. He mentioned that sure as fire, the ECA stack could will cause you to fail a drug test. So if you take regular drug tests, be wary of that. If you're taking one soon, be wary of that. I said, and I reinforce it, this is not a daily use thing. This is a survival thing to use. You need that extra energy to survive. You take your ECA. Not you know, an afternoon pick me up. Don't use it for that. So with that, DIY to close your wounds, use guys.